Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, brought to you by Shoulder of Orion, the Blade Runner podcast. Today's episode is called Play to the Whistle. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy, and I'm joined by Matt Two Rumpets. How's it going there, Matt?
It's going great. How about yourself there, Spanners?
Yeah, I'm going really well. I mean, I'm having a bit of a laugh at the internet because people are saying all over Twitter and Facebook that this championship is over and Lewis Hamilton is the champion in waiting. Have these people never seen sports before? Lady Sports does not like teams or fans taking things for granted until she is darn well ready.
Sports period. Don't like you saying it's over till it's over. And we have many a saying about that. But if you're just looking in sheer probabilistic terms, yeah, it's looking very, very favorable for Lewis to maintain his lead till the end of the championship.
Yeah, but you don't walk out before the end of the game. I'm going to keep going to football analogies because there are those fans that will walk out on a match when their team is down by a goal or two. And I've seen it watching Colchester United in the conference all those years ago on cold winter evenings. I've seen people just leave and get up. But if you see something from your team, some spark of resistance, and you can see that your guys, your girls are still fighting, then sometimes, just sometimes, you get to see the very best of sport. Think of Liverpool, 3 goals down in the 2005 Champions League. AC Milan had shirts on underneath their strips, ready for the photo that said AC Milan, Champions League champions. Liverpool, of course, went and scored 3 goals in 6 minutes and won on penalties. Then the greatest one, for those of us who grew up with English teams being banned from European competition, 1999, Manchester United coming back twice in extra time to win 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, these things happen, and every sports fan can point to that game where we were losing and there was no hope, and yeah, we pulled it off, but at the risk of taking the wet blanket award, how often does that really happen compared to the times your team is in that situation?
It's worth it. You've got to hang on in there, and I hope the Ferrari fans are still up for this, because it's been really great sparring back and forth with the Tifosi this season when it's been so close. I hope that they and Scuderia Ferrari themselves still have some fight left. We are an independent podcast hosted by MissedApexPodcast.com. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. This show is safe for work. We're keeping it clean here so you can play this with kids in the background or at work. We are joined by a rocket ship of journalism on his way to the high heavens of reporting, Chris Rainbow Sparkle Stevens. How's it going, Chris?
It's going just great. How are you, Spanners?
Oh my gosh, you're in HD, Chris. I don't like it.
I know, it's amazing. It's so clear you can even see the freckle next to my nose.
And alongside him completing our panel is Downforce Radio boss and commentary guru, the most excited puppy dog that's ever graced a microphone, Jake Sanson.
Hello, Spanners. Great to be with you again. And big up for the Colchester United reference. That was such a big yes from me on that one.
It was a hard admission to make. But yes, I spent many a cold evening at Layer Road in the mid to late 90s.
Layer Road. That takes me back a bit.
And hello to the live chat room as well. Always a pleasure to have you guys here. If you'd like to join the live chat, then go to YouTube, find Missed Apex Podcast, click subscribe, click on the little bell, and you will get a notification every time we go live. Matt, before the race got going, and even before qualifying, we had some news that those dastardly French people had gotten up to no good.
Well, yeah, or they simply pulled one over on Red Bull. Take your pick. Yes, and the previous Grand Prix at Malaysia, that was all the talk about where exactly Marcin Butkowski would land, whether he would even land in Formula One, although the rumor was that Renault had signed him, and in 3 glorious months, he would begin spilling all of the secrets of all of the teams in an effort to get Renault over the top and into the sharp end of the field. And sure enough, this week we've had confirmation from Renault that exactly this has happened. Butkowski is going to work for them, and in 3 months, he's going to start to have an impact on what they're up to in 2018.
Chris, can you imagine the negotiations for his contract? Hi, I know all the things. Give me all the money.
It is quite an amazing scenario that Renault and indeed, well, the rest of the teams have found themselves in. And I can completely understand why the teams are so upset about this, because you're absolutely right. He has got every single secret and bit of information about all the other teams that he could just hand to Renault on a silver platter. And there's been a lot of debate and negotiation as to whether or not they can extend this gardening leave before he does start his tenure at Renault. But even if they do extend it to 6 or 12 months, he's still got so much information at hand.
Yeah, Lawrence in the chat room is just saying that gardening has been extended to 6 months, according to Ted Kravitz, apparently. So there is that. But even then, damage done, perhaps.
Because you would have thought they would have done most of the development work on the 2018 car by now anyway. So anything that he does bring into the team would have been brought in for late 2018 development and 2019 as well.
I tell you what, I hope he has got a good contract, because the teams are quickly going to figure out which things he's passed on and which things he hasn't passed on. So he might find he's got a bit of a shelf life, but, you know, maybe the golden handshake made it worth it. Onto the media side of things a little bit, Jake. NBC, I don't know, lost their contract, or it's not been renewed, and it's gone over to public access.
ESPN is what they're getting. So I don't know what that means. I think Trumpets knows more about that deal than I do and what it actually means for American viewers. What I'm worried it means is that the voice of Will Buxton will no more adorn a Formula One broadcast coverage. And that is shameful. He is just about the voice of reason in Formula One, and he cannot be sat on the sidelines doing nothing next year. I'm kind of hoping, actually, that Jack Nicholls ends up doing something a bit more full-time on one of the other stations in Formula One. Maybe he might get Sky F1 or Channel 4 full-time or something. I don't know. And then that opens the door for Will Buxton to take over the 5 Live job. I would love Will Buxton on BBC 5 Live. I mean, I'm not saying I don't like Jack, because I do like Jack, but I would love to have, you know, the new dream team, the new kids on the block, if you will, Jack Nicholls and Will Buxton as the voices of reason in British Formula One coverage. We need him. We need him back.
Absolutely. I think he is far too much of an acknowledged talent. He's not like some, you know, budding star that only a few people have discovered. You know, he is a mainstream, popular and effective presenter. And we did actually have him here on the show in July, I think, of last year. There's no way he's not going to get picked up somewhere. So don't worry, Jake. What of Palmer? What of Palmer, Matt? He's gone. We thought he was going to tough it out to the end of the season. Do you think it's just reached maximum awkwardness?
I think it kind of has. The team reported that the timing of his announcement that he was gone was due to his request to not be bombarded by the press at the circuit, but still have a weekend to say goodbye to all of his Formula One friends. And speaking of friends, our friend Summers is tossing it out there that he might yet be more in running for the Williams seat. We're all assuming Massa will be vacating when all is said and done, because he does bring a budget and because he does have experience of current cars. So there's that to argue about as well. And I'm just going to sneak in and answer a question that Jake asked, much to your annoyance. The thing about NBC is they officially put out a statement saying they were giving up the rights because they didn't want to compete with the organization, the FOM organization itself. And that certainly has some implications for digital offerings we might be seeing in the near future.
All right. Well, Chris, before we go to the race, there was some pivotal activity. We knew that Bottas was going to get a 5-place grid penalty, making him far less useful in the rear gunner role. But also, Kimi Raikkonen ended up with one as well. What happened there?
Yeah, it's a bit of a silly crash in FP3 at Degner 2. And the damage was done pretty much immediately, and he then needed a gearbox change, which of course resulted in a 5-place grid penalty. So you would have had both of your championship contenders without their rear gunners.
Yeah, and also, yeah, go on, Matt, sorry.
That's okay. Interestingly enough, I heard on the pre-race show that it took almost half an hour for Ferrari to get the car back from that crash, and that impacted their ability to reassemble it before qualifying.
Well, of course, Suzuka is a very traditional racing circuit, and the thing that came up in FP3, you know, is that we saw a lot of drivers making mistakes and actually being punished for it for once. None of these tarmac runoff areas where you go off and actually gain time somehow, and that then extends into, you know, your service getting back to the pit. It's a lot harder. It's less sort of well built for that, as it were. And it's a tough part of the track as well, because then you have to get across the track, you have to go underneath the track, all the way back through the S's as well, just to get back to the pit lane.
I will counter you slightly, Chris, when you sort of hark back to some glory days before runoff areas and skip ahead slightly. We saw Stroll hurtling out of control on the grass, nearly hitting Daniel Ricciardo. And what saved him eventually? As soon as they hit the tarmac, that car was able to turn and stop. And tarmac lets you turn and stop.
If that had been a tarmac runoff area, he still would have been a passenger in that scenario.
Rubbish. Right, you didn't watch it, because as soon as he got onto the road, he was able to steer safely away and get himself out of trouble.
That was because the speed had dropped off.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't think it would have made a massive amount of difference, personally. What you've got to take into account is that Suzuka has barely any runoff area anyway. We always mock, we always had that stereotypical metaphor, Hungaroring is the Monaco without barriers. No, Suzuka is. It's really quite close. You've got barely any runoff area in that particular part of the course as well, even if that had been tarmac runoff. In fact, to a certain extent, because of the way that the puncture just blew the tire in that exact moment, it probably wouldn't even have helped him slow down the car as much as going over the grass. He probably would have actually been more likely to strike Ricciardo's car if it not been grass.
Well, first of all, I don't know, but to my eyes, it looked like gravel and not grass that he went across.
You know what I mean. It's the stuff that's off the racing line. You know what I mean.
And second of all, I got to say, if we're going to hand out props, we got to hand it out to young Lance Stroll, because he could have lost that in a much worse way. And you could see all the way through the gravel trap and back onto the tarmac. He was maintaining control and working to keep the car orientated so that he could maintain control of it.
Orientated. That's worse than Bottas. Let's go on to the race. Although we might have to check up on whether that pronunciation is right. Somebody was suggesting that Bottas is actually closer to the correct pronunciation than Bottas. So you might yet be vindicated here, Matt.
Yeah, I think his first name rhymes with Valtteri.
Oh, right. So he said it. I mean, I'll concede he's quite an authority on his name. All right. Well, rather than dwell on me being wrong, let's go on to the race. And as always, let's ask you where the race was won and lost. I think people were saying this was a straight fight between a two-stopper and a one-stopper. Then suddenly the heat just impacted in a way that it had not been there all weekend.
Right. Well, if we just think back to Malaysia, one of the points that Toto Wolff listed as being critical for how Mercedes cars did was the temperature of the track. Now, on qualifying, the temperature was 26. Race day, it was 44, and much closer to what we saw in Malaysia. So right off the bat, you would think that Red Bull and Ferrari, because we still thought they had a functioning car then, would have a distinct advantage over the course of the whole race. So the temperature alone was important, and equally important, of course, always in a Formula One race, would be the start and who wound up where over the first lap or two. And that was ultra critical, because we had Ricciardo ahead of Verstappen, which is a rare win for the Australian.
Yeah, needed it.
And we also had Ocon ahead of Perez, which promised perhaps some entertainment into the opening turn, but also wound up being very, very critical the way things played out.
Okay, then. Talk us through the actual start itself, Matt. Critical for Lewis Hamilton to get through into the bit where it's single file, and he did. And it's sort of weird. You'd think that the pole position would be on the inside to help lock that down, but it was on the outside.
Yeah, it's on the outside at Suzuka, and this wound up being a big issue for Ricciardo behind. But of course, the biggest advantage for Hamilton was that Vettel's engine, and specifically his spark plug or his coil pack, failed on the way to the grid on the formation lap, and Ferrari were unable to either get it changed or change the mapping of the car so that it wouldn't be an issue for him.
Oh, that is tragic. And I can see it from the other people's side, you know, from Vettel fans' perspective. With so many disastrous races building up to this, they're really hoping that in a straight fight, he could just take it to Lewis Hamilton. And it was set to be an out-and-out straight fight today.
Yeah, it was. And had he gotten the jump at the start, which if we look at, for example, what Verstappen did to Ricciardo getting ahead of him, what Ocon did to Ricciardo getting ahead of him from the even side of the grid, there was a really good chance that Vettel could have ended lap one under the safety car ahead of Hamilton, except for, of course, his power unit gave up the ghost. And we can talk about the reasons for that a little bit later, if you like.
Yeah, spark plugs. When the spark plugs go, I remember like maybe 15 years ago, you had to sit there with your little shim and check the spark plugs were the correct distance apart. Jake, you drive terrible cars. Do you still change spark plugs?
I have been known to, although I would like to ask you, what is a shim? I've never actually heard that word before. Could you give us some kind of definition?
It is normally a metallic, but it could be a wood device that allows you to have a set and known separation between two items.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone else understand that? I don't know. I do drive awful cars, although I'm currently driving a lovely one. Spark plugs in Formula One failing, I don't know. It just seems so petty. I mean, it's like you fail to score a goal because you forgot to tie your shoelaces. It is literally one of the most mundane components on a modern Formula One car that could go wrong. And it's kind of funny that, you know, we've had very, very embarrassing start line problems for Ferrari in two consecutive weekends now. And ultimately, you know, that has effectively killed their championship. Let's not forget, 3 weekends ago at Singapore, they were practically level in the championship. Now, all of a sudden, Hamilton has a 59-point lead. How the hell has that happened?
Someone in the chat room was saying Mercedes managed to... Here we go. Epsteiger, according to Autosport, Mercedes changed a spark plug on Hamilton's car after quali. So maybe it's not all that uncommon. Cody is saying spark plugs are cheap in comparison to getting a full service or getting a more expensive car, I suppose, Jake. And Christopher is suggesting that what Vettel is suffering from is karma. You might say that. I couldn't possibly comment. Matt, so Vettel is falling dramatically down the pack, eventually has to retire. Where does that leave us?
Well, where that leaves us is suddenly with Verstappen in second place, Ocon in third place, because Carlos Sainz got very clever and thought he'd go around the outside up the hill into the S's and instead oversteered into a wall. So maybe not quite as clever as he thought. And under the safety car, you had Ricciardo all the way down to fourth. And Raikkonen also critically lost three places having a go at Hülkenberg, and he was run wide at Spoon.
Can I just make a very brief point about the Carlos Sainz incident? It's hilarious that Carlos Sainz seems to think he could be Eddie Irvine, because only Eddie Irvine is allowed to be Eddie Irvine. And as we know, only Eddie Irvine was stupid enough to try and overtake and move around the outside at that point in 97, I think, when he got to the front of the queue to help out Schumacher in the championship. He's the only moron who's ever tried it, the only moron who's got away with it. And anybody who tries it since has always ended in disaster. Well done, Carlos. Clearly not a historian.
And that gave us the safety car. So I had put a bet on three safety cars. I'm still trying to figure out now whether virtual safety cars counters safety cars. And it's a question we get a lot. How I believe it works is, yes, a virtual safety car for betting and fantasy leagues counts. But if it then turns into a full safety car, that does not then count as an additional safety car. But Matt, this was the opportunity that Vettel would have taken advantage of, being under safety car conditions.
Yeah, it would have been great for him if Lewis had gotten away, it would have left him right on his tail. And had he been in front, he would have been well set up to gap him off at the race restart. And interestingly, as part of Verstappen and Ricciardo battle after the race, Ricciardo said he basically didn't even know Verstappen was there because the cars are wider and the vision is worse. And we've touched on that in the past, particularly with the placement of the side view mirrors is an issue that FIA ought to be looking at. And what Ricciardo said after the race to me confirms that we're seeing more collisions and problems this year because the vision is worse because the car's dimensions have changed.
Is it as simple as just putting bigger wing mirrors on?
Yeah, or putting cameras on and going to a heads-up display.
Oh, that would be brilliant. That's a great shout. There's absolutely no reason why you couldn't have a rear camera and side cameras and just have them in a little HUD at the top of the helmet.
Yep, they do it in other series.
That's incredible. That would work. Anyway, so we got clear of that safety car, and really that was the front settled down, and there was only really... You know, I'm trying to get in my head, could Verstappen realistically have got past Lewis Hamilton today? And it feels like there was two distinct points. The first of which was probably, what, him catching up to Bottas? I mean, that was after the first set of stops, because even with Red Bull having two drivers and two chances to have a stab at Lewis Hamilton, really, Ricciardo got taken out of that battle.
Absolutely.
You had two different drivers there with two different setups as well. Ricciardo was running less downforce on his Red Bull because, and this is not something you'll hear very often, the drivers were complaining they had too much downforce and they were losing so much speed in that final sector. So that was, you know, one element that you would have expected Ricciardo to actually do a little bit better in the race than Max.
Well, but overall downforce matters to tire longevity. And in general, the faster you go through the turns, the faster you go, period. The reason Ricciardo took it off was his straight line speed was so poor. And Verstappen opted to keep it on. And if we look at the race outcome, you know, it's arguable, but Verstappen certainly had better pace in the race. I think critically for what you're talking about, we discussed whether it was going to be a two-stopper or one-stopper. Pirelli had said with the temperatures, a two-stopper might be the way to go, but we know that certainly at the front, one-stoppers are always the preference because who knows what could happen in an actual pit stop. And what we saw, in my opinion, was that Verstappen, once he realized Ricciardo wasn't going to be able to catch up and give him a proper split strategy attack on Hamilton, because he was about 10 seconds, 12 seconds back because it took him so long to get past Ocon, I think they pitted Verstappen early, hoping to put pressure on Mercedes tires and get past at the end as Mercedes tires degrade more quickly under high temperatures. And they had been already announced that by the time they got to turn 7, the tires were overheating at the back, and that was going to be an issue for them during the whole race.
And the thing for Verstappen as well, you know, he got that better start than Daniel. Was that because he had the extra downforce on the car and had the extra purchase on the rear tires off the line. And I can sort of see where Ricciardo was going with it. I think, yes, it would have hurt his tire life, and it's probably had to adapt to that more than Max for this race, especially when it became clear that you could do a one stop, which would have been preferred. I think the kind of thought process behind it was because Suzuka is such a difficult track to overtake on. It's important to have a car with good straight line speed so that you can defend a position, because we know that in general that Red Bull has been struggling for top end speed. So you can kind of see where they're sort of going with their split strategy.
Right. Absolutely. And critically, oh, sorry, go ahead, Spanner.
Oh, I was just going to go to the chat room because Philip Allen there says mass in a helmet at 5Gs is an issue. And Steve counters with, well, with enough cameras on the car, the drivers could just sit in a sim rig in the pits. Then we don't need the halo. And then you can have infinite G-force as well. Yeah, why not? Well, you could take the fear out of it, I suppose, by doing that. So you could just have people with, like, tasers or something. So if they hit the wall, you taser the driver as an incentive to keep it on the tarmac. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here. But, Chris, you made a good point, I think, about the straight line speed. We saw it when Bottas on old soft tires, I wish they'd just call them hard. We don't need to know whether it's soft, super soft, or all. The harder of the tires was able to hold off Max Verstappen fairly comfortably before he went on his pit stop. and Verstappen was on a fresh set of tires. Sorry, Matt, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, why don't we go back to prime and option? I sort of loved that.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely no reason for us to be informed of which particular compound it is. Just tell us which of the three of the weekend it is. I'd be more than happy with that. So speaking of when Verstappen, Hamilton and Bottas were on track together, we had a very, very interesting situation, Matt.
Yeah, we did. And I just wanted to finish up my pit stop point on the way to that, if you don't mind, in the sense that Pirelli had said it would be a 22-lap stint for a one-stopper. But in the past, we've seen the teams go extend that 3, 4 or more laps. And yet Verstappen was in lap 21 for the undercut, and that it worked very well because he had about a 4-second gap going into the pit stop. And when he came out and Hamilton answered the next lap, it was 1.5 seconds. And it wasn't really going anywhere until they caught up to Bottas. And at that point, Verstappen began closing him down. And it started to look very worrying. I had thought that Mercedes would just send Hamilton right on by, but he actually held station for a lap or two, making you think that either Mercedes wasn't on it or they had some sort of ulterior motive.
I think what they were trying to do with Bottas was just make sure he still had the gap for when he made his pit stop, because we know he was extending that first step. So as soon as everyone else came into the pits, he was going to end up losing time. And if he had had to move aside for Lewis, which obviously he ended up doing, that would have cost him a fair bit of time. So I can kind of see why they were sort of umming and ahhing in getting him out of the way at first.
But the fact is, as Matt has said here, Mercedes had their hand kind of forced by Verstappen's pit stop. So yes, they might not have had the ultimate pace, but they have got the pace to dictate to Lewis Hamilton when he's got to pit to avoid, you know, the undercut. If he'd have gone out a few more laps, no doubt he'd have come out behind Verstappen. So Chris, what Joshua Clare is asking in the chat room is, where has this Red Bull pace suddenly come from?
Well, a lot of it's been temperature related. And a big talking point in Malaysia and Singapore was the higher temperatures. And that's why we were talking about temperatures today, when they suddenly shot up some 20 degrees between qualifying and the race. Why we thought that the Mercedes pace was going to deteriorate a little bit compared to Ferrari and Red Bull. You know, the Mercedes had not been working too well in those hotter conditions. So a lot of it's been to do with that. But the other point I was going to sort of make about what were we talking about before you asked me that question?
Sort of make. The point you were going to sort of make. I think that sums you up.
Thanks. Can you answer my question?
No, I can't remember. I'm looking at the next thing.
We were out. Never mind then.
We were talking about coming up with the pit stops and Hamilton, Bottas letting Hamilton by.
Yes, I was going to refute your statement that Mercedes didn't have the pace this weekend, because if Verstappen could have won that race, he would have won that race. He's got absolutely nothing to lose. He's got no championship to fight for. If he saw one opportunity to get by Lewis Hamilton, he would have taken it. And Lewis wouldn't have fought him, because he's got the championship to think about. It's what happened in Malaysia, and it would have happened if Red Bull had the pace. I just don't think that they were as quick a car as the Mercedes today.
Let's be fair, though. There are two things that are a little bit deceptive in that argument. And I love that you've made it, because there are two things, one of which has actually been picked up by, I'm guessing, who is it? Blackout19 has picked this up in the chat room. The RBR pace has been there for a while now. It's just been hidden behind the terrible Renault reliability. You know, we've been nattering away all season about how rubbish the Renault package is. In the last 4 or 5 races, that Renault package has actually looked incredibly strong. And all of a sudden, the Renault engine that's in the back of the Red Bull is actually a fighting force. I mean, you can't lie about the fact that, you know, they've been able to take it to Mercedes on a couple of occasions. I mean, who knows whether Hamilton would have won the Singapore Grand Prix if Verstappen had been allowed to challenge him there as well. He got taken out in that first corner pileup. He could even have been alongside Hamilton in the fight for the victory there. He beat him legitimately and on merit in Sepang. That Red Bull with that Renault engine is actually a fighting force. So there's no reason why he couldn't have done. The second thing is, you're also forgetting the fact that in the last 2 laps, Verstappen had closed to within less than a second of Lewis Hamilton. But we ended up with Massa and Alonso clearly not knowing what on earth happens when they are lapped, because they don't get lapped very often. So, well, they do recently, but of course, both of them are race-winning drivers. So they obviously have this blue flag haze moment. Oh, please don't lap me. I don't want to be lapped. So clearly they didn't know what to do in the situation. Had that not have happened, I think Verstappen probably would have gone for it on the penultimate lap. And Hamilton, again, probably would have surrendered, as you say. So I genuinely think Verstappen could have and probably should have won today.
Do you think it was interesting, though, that on the team radio, they were saying to Max Verstappen, look, if it's a really clear chance, go for it. But they were sort of cautioning him not to do anything crazy.
Well, yeah, that was to do with the fact that they had a bit of an issue with one of the tyres that was basically flat spotting after the last pit stop, I think it was. They were having an issue with the tyre. So they basically wanted to get him to sit behind Hamilton for the entirety of, so that he wasn't wearing out the tire too much. He wasn't pushing the car too hard. So he could easily, I think he probably could have beaten Hamilton today if it weren't for that tire issue.
Right. And I would agree with you there. But it was a blister and the tire was down to the canvas. And that was the concern at Red Bull. So we have an interesting situation. And although you made an excellent attempt to filibuster and make me forget all of my points, I also would circumscribe your description of the Renault power unit as only on the Red Bull, because only on the Red Bull does the Renault power unit look even halfway good. Otherwise, you had, for example, both Haas finishing ahead of every other Renault-powered car today. But that's neither here nor there. What's interesting is we had Red Bull pitting early to put tire pressure on Mercedes.
Yeah.
Then we had not one, but two virtual safety cars. And the virtual safety car for Ericsson in particular, I think, worked very much to Mercedes' advantage. It gave them a chance to cool the car. It gave them a chance to cool the tires and gave them several laps where they weren't seriously degrading the tires. The second virtual safety car for Stroll's incident worked very much to the disadvantage, because I watched that first lap on the timing. And then the second lap, Hamilton was 2 seconds slower. He'd actually gained time. He'd actually gone out almost a second under the virtual safety car. But after the first full lap at race pace, he lost 2 seconds. And that was down to vibrations that he had said were due to the power unit. He was short shifting to save fuel, but later was ascribed to the tires. And now we all know that worn tires that have lost enough tread can be perilously difficult to get and keep in the window. And that was the explanation that was given by Mercedes post race. This gave Verstappen a real shot, except for pitting early didn't work to their advantage either, because Verstappen blistered his tire and there went his chance to win the race.
Absolutely. And Lewis Hamilton did end up winning that race. And he now has a lead of some 59 points, I believe, going in with 4 races to go. Today's podcast is brought to you by Shoulder of Orion. The Blade Runner podcast is the premier Blade Runner saga podcast on the internet, with exclusive interviews, roundtable discussions, and in-depth journalistic segments. Shoulder of Orion seeks to bring the global fan community closer than ever before. Produced by the creative team behind the groundbreaking Perfect Pause Organism podcast, Shoulder of Orion is available on all popular podcast platforms. More at www.perfectorganism.com. This is Patrick Green's podcast, who is in our Patreon Slack group. Patrick is a man with a boundless energy, and if you are in any way into that universe, and if I'm much mistaken, there is some talk that the Blade Runner and Alien universes are connected, then you want to be listening to what they produce. And I also want to thank the listeners for a bit of a pep talk I got last week. Yes, we're in your ears every Monday for your Monday morning commute, but we have lives, they have ups and downs. And I guess last week I had a lot of demand on my time and resources from pesky things like work and children and wives. And I think I went into last week's show feeling not that great. And I walked away thinking, oh, that was subpar. What am I doing? I'm a terrible person. And then only to be cheered up on Monday morning by you guys with questions, comments, encouragement. Me and Matt did a podcast that I loved called Dad Hub for a year. And in the end, I think it was a lack of interaction, a lack of engagement, a lack of knowing what was happening when we were putting this thing out into the internet that eventually meant when we hit hurdles, we didn't overcome them.
Yes, it was unfortunate because it was a really great podcast. And it's fantastic that we've been able to sort of keep the flame going here. And yeah, the future looks very interesting indeed.
But when we ask ourselves why, we get a very emphatic response from you guys why we keep on doing it. And we appreciate it. Thank you very much. And congratulations to patron Joshua Clare, who is getting married. His darling missus said yes when he asked if she would marry him. Now, she may seem lovely now, Joshua, but let me warn you, they change. Something about that day, they change. Wives are mean. All right, let's talk about the championship. Well, Chris, everyone's saying that this championship is over. But if you'll indulge me for a second, let's look at how it's played out since the summer. And stop me when you wildly disagree with me, because in Belgium, Mercedes won. But as I recall, the internet granted that win, like a spiritual win, to Sebastian Vettel. But they were beaten. In Monza, at the home of Ferrari, they were absolutely thumped, but still very much in the championship. Then Singapore happened. Malaysia then, it turned away from being drivers and overall performance to a series of tech letdowns all through the weekend. But hey, wasn't Sebastian amazing at cutting through slower cars to the incredible fourth place that he achieved there in Malaysia? And now the team had a sick car for Vettel and a working car for a man on track who now so rarely delivers. Chris, it's been a complete disaster. I can't find a silver lining there.
No, it's been a series of unfortunate events for Ferrari and Sebastian Vettel. And just go back to Hungary at the end of the first half of the season. And Sebastian Vettel was well in control of this championship, had pretty much a win, or even more than a win's advantage over Lewis Hamilton in the championship. And, you know, Spa, that was their last clean weekend at Ferrari. And since then, it's just unraveled so much. And today was a race he absolutely needed to win if he wanted to take back control of this championship. And it's so unfortunate, because this championship has been fantastic. I love the fact that they've been so closely matched, and they'll be going to a weekend not knowing which car is going to be working well, which driver it's going to favor. There are so many different factors. That's a proper championship, and it has not unraveled the way it should have done. And for what has been a very closely fought championship, it almost looks like Lewis could wrap up the title within, you know, within the next two races. And, you know, that's fair enough. You know, I don't want to say the championship is completely over, because if being at the Montreal E-Prix taught me anything, it's that, you know, don't take anything for granted. But I think, as Matt alluded to earlier, it's looking very favorable for Lewis Hamilton right now. He doesn't have to take any risk. He can finish second to Seb for the remainder of the season and still win the championship.
And let's look at it from the point of view as well. The bad luck that Vettel had coming into this weekend is not just limited to the fact that, you know, he was obviously having those engine issues. I mean, he had the problems on the grid. And to add insult to injury, I know I've been belittling Vettel over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and I wish I could have been on last week's show after Malaysia, because I had so much to say. I couldn't say it, so I had to do it on pit board instead. But it was a really, really painful experience to watch Vettel, because everything was kicking off as the national anthem was going. And obviously nowadays it's mandatory that all drivers have to go to the national anthem. And who wasn't there? Sebastian Vettel. Gosh. Because Sebastian Vettel was basically hanging around his car, making sure it all fired up again. Now, I personally feel that that's a stupid rule, because in those circumstances, I don't see any reason why standing, listening to a piece of music, whether it's that particular country's national anthem or not, is actually going to either A, endear you to the crowd when the alternative is not knowing what's going on with your car when you're sitting on the starting grid, or is actually going to gain you any percentage of lap times. It's just lunacy. And the very fact of the matter is, he got reprimanded for missing the national anthem because he was trying to figure out what was going on with his car. This is how far the regulations have basically been written on the back of a sheet of paper that's been discarded from some child's drawing. It's lunacy that a guy can get a reprimand and now be one reprimand away from actually gaining a 10-second grid penalty for a future race because he missed the national anthem due to the fact he was hovering around his car. It's lunacy. FOM need to tear up the rule book and start again.
Now, wait, I do not want to get into what you can and can't do during a national anthem. Please, Austin, go without incident. Please, Austin, go by without any incident. Anyway, put politics aside. Yeah, it is a bit of a silly rule. So it's a nicety, I think, is how it should be viewed, to get up to the front to your national anthem. Clearly, if there's a racing or technical issue, there should be some kind of dispensation. But Matt, I don't think it's like a one-off. I'm not seeing this as unlucky. It feels like there's something systematic happening at Ferrari, something endemic with their engineering that has kind of culminated, has maybe built up and is now showing its ugly face towards the back end of the season where it really matters. What I'm wondering is, have they, in a desperate bid to catch up with Mercedes, chosen performance over reliability, and now it's catching up with them?
Well, it's interesting in that your innate paranoia has served you well, because I believe you are absolutely correct on this issue. They have indeed been forced to choose performance over reliability. And if there is a hidden story to why Lewis Hamilton is likely to win the championship, and if he does win it, the critical maneuver, in my incredibly humble opinion, would be Mercedes introducing that engine in Spa ahead of the new regulations coming on for Monza. And everything we have learned about what's going on since that happened indicates that Ferrari's initial version 4 engine, which Vettel installed one race early, was not designed to cope with the new 0.6 liter per 100.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kilometers regulation, which tells you a lot about how difficult it is to re-engineer these things and why these sudden rule changes mid-season can really tank a team. And what we saw the ears go on when the new power unit went in. That's because the oil, and because it was introduced at Monza or later, it has to only run the 0.6 liters. The oil is part of also cooling the inside of the chamber, and they had to introduce the supposition is they had to introduce the extra cooling to keep the engine from burning up. And the other thing we know, given that it was a spark plug failure, is that the TJI ignition, turbulent jet ignition, that is now being used by pretty much all of the manufacturers, I believe, also puts a great deal of stress on the spark plug. And in fact, according to Autosport, Mercedes replaced one of Lewis's spark plugs after qualifying before the race. Now, that's a perfectly legal thing to do, but they probably would only have done it if they'd had some indication there might be a fault with it.
It's interesting, because this is kind of helping the metaphor that I've been coming up with over the last sort of 6 days or so along, because Ferrari 1991 was basically a complete and total systems meltdown internally and externally. Everything just went completely wrong. They had the best driver on their team in Alain Prost. They had great engineers, and none of them could communicate with each other. The car was garbage. It all just fell apart at the seams. History's repeating itself, because everything, all the ingredients should be working perfectly. They started the season with a competitive package. They had probably the best package at the start of the season, and they had a legitimate claim to the championship. But now, dramatically, Mercedes and Renault, I'm going to put that in there, Renault as well, have completely caught them up. And I don't think Ferrari expected Mercedes to be on the same level as them and compete with them. I think it's completely taken them by surprise that Renault have been able to throw a candle to them. And once again, Adrian Newey's baby is just waiting there to pick up the pieces. He's just such a genius when it comes to car design that Red Bull, once again, with those two fantastic drivers, Daniel Ricciardo and Max Verstappen, they've closed down the gap to Ferrari. And because Ferrari is playing safe with their, you know, whinging, whining child of a driver, Sebastian Vettel, who can't blame anybody, who can blame anybody but himself, and Kimi Raikkonen, who just basically is not a world-class Formula One driver anymore, in my opinion, they're just melting down. I mean, they're going to finish third in the Constructors' Championship at this rate. It's just going to be absolutely awful.
Very nice. But I guarantee you, Mr. Sanson, that if Ferrari were allowed to run 1.2 liters of oil burn per 100 kilometers, they'd be very, very competitive right now. I think you're underestimating the extent to which that regulation change has ruined their plans for the season. And I have to also correct, it's 0.6 of a liter for next season, but it was changed to 0.9 of a liter for the remainder of the 2017 season.
That does still kind of back up my point a little bit, though, because Mercedes anticipated that and Ferrari didn't. So Ferrari clearly don't have the mental capacity to be able to adapt to those kind of regulations, whereas Mercedes, and to a certain extent Renault actually now, you know, they seem to have made that gain, and Ferrari are just left squandering around going, what the hell are we doing? Why the hell are we losing?
So me and Matt have been arguing all season long about which car you'd rather have and which is the better car, however you want to define that. Come on, Matt, I win now. The Mercedes is a better car. It's a better package. It's a better team.
Well, now I would disagree with you. If you were going to ask me which car I would rather have,
yeah,
I'll tell you which car I'd rather have. I'd rather have the Ferrari with the Mercedes engine. That's the car that I would like.
That's a cop out, and you should just admit that I'm right and I'm brilliant and handsome.
Chris, what would you have?
I'd take the Ferrari still, because, and I'll tell you what, because we cannot possibly say that the Mercedes is fundamentally the better car when Ferrari haven't had a clean weekend in three consecutive Grand Prix.
Because they've got a worse car, Chris. That's why they haven't had a clean weekend.
Oh, okay. So Singapore happened because Ferrari have got a bad car. No.
Oh, no. That's because of idiotic driving. But the last two races, right, their car has let them down. And if you have poor reliability, that's not an act of God. That's a design choice you're making.
Okay. Right. Okay. In terms of reliability, yes, they're struggling. In terms of the actual race pace of that car,
they're linked.
We cannot judge that.
They are linked because you can flatter to deceive with a very fast car, and if you don't worry about reliability, all bets are off. So that performance that you're perceiving is fake. It's not real. It's an illusion.
No, I disagree. I don't think that, you know, Mercedes only lost races this year because they've got a more reliable car. And I would definitely say if they have a clean weekend in Austin and they beat the Mercedes, then once again, you can say Ferrari, still on a Sunday, the better car.
I'd like to point out that the car I would choose is the Red Bull. I don't think I would go for either the Mercedes or the Ferrari, because both the Mercedes and the Ferrari have looked flawed in the last three races by comparison to the Red Bull. Yes, Hamilton has won two of the three races by the skin of his teeth, I feel, because obviously, you know, the Red Bull basically gave both the Ferrari and the Mercedes a complete butt whooping at Sepang when nobody expected them to. If Verstappen hadn't have been taken out of Sepang, I think he'd have challenged Hamilton. He did challenge Hamilton today. Whether you say he could have won or not, whether he says he could have won or not, is irrelevant. He very nearly won today. I think that's the car to have right now. I genuinely think the Red Bull Renault, maybe not in qualifying, but in the race, that is the car to have.
Well, I think if you were talking about next season, I think you might have a good argument, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about which car we'd want in 2018. Apologies to the live stream. You know, this is quite an internet and processing power heavy process, and it was going red. It's gone back to green now. Normal service should have been resumed. Be sure to check out missedapexpodcast.com/livestream. That will give you all the details of how to find the YouTube channel, and it will also let you play right from the webpage the last few episodes, if I remember to put them up there. All right then, Matt, let's go on to any other business. In fact, let's go to Chris for this one, since you're a journalist who likes to have his fingers in the paddock. Hang on a minute. Ears in the paddock? Eyes on the paddock? Look, the saddest man in the paddock at the moment is a guy who is regularly on podiums. It's Valtteri Bottas. even though his place at Mercedes is assured, he looks deeply unhappy. Like, he looks worryingly upset. He was taking it in his stride, this point, this pace difference, but the pace just isn't there, and it looks like it's starting to get to him.
Well, he's flat out admitted that a lot of Mercedes updates, especially since the summer break, have very much played against him, and that his driving style is not suiting the new balance of the car. And that's something that he is most definitely working on. But I think maybe this weekend, that issue has been exaggerated somewhat, because Suzuka is a proper, you know, driver's circuit. And it's a circuit where you have to have the car, you know, therefore you can't drag around an imperfect car around for one lap, let alone an entire Grand Prix here. So I think there's an element of that. Also an element of Lewis basically just being brilliant this weekend. It has been one of his top weekends. But I do have to give credit to Valtteri for his qualifying effort, especially after losing out on his qualifying run in FP3. After what was quite embarrassing looking, but made it easy to have a crash at Spoon. So I felt like that was quite a good recovery for him. But yes, Bottas most definitely struggling and working at that to get himself back up onto his old level, as it were.
Can he get there for 2018? Can he get there?
I think in 2018 as well, he'll have a little bit more input in the design of the car. It will be built more around him, because let's face it, he's walked into Nico Rosberg's car this year. I don't see any reason why Valtteri can't challenge for the title next year.
I don't agree. We'll see, obviously, if it pans out, but I think that gap is too big. I think that's going to prove...
I completely disagree in every single possible respect. I mean, Valtteri is a bit like Carlos Reutemann in the respect that he only really seems to bring out his A game when the car works for him. The rest of the time, he just looks decidedly average. And that's a real problem if you want to win the Constructors' Championship, because what Mercedes have had in the last few years is two drivers who can win races and go podiums consistently in Hamilton and Rosberg. They went for Bottas because their hand was forced. And basically what they've got is another Kimi Räikkönen, a man who's not really reliable and dependable enough long term to win the Constructors' Championship. I'm sorry, I just don't think he's got what it takes.
Whenever Lewis hasn't been there, has Valtteri been there to pick up the pieces? Yes, he has. Has Bottas been able to challenge Lewis, especially, you know, given that those first few races, obviously he's jumped straight into the car.
Yeah.
After that, he did put on a good challenge. And actually, do you know what? After his win in Austria, we're almost saying he could fight for this championship. And, you know, he'll have a year under his belt next year in that car. He'll be more designed around him, be more comfortable within the team. I'm not saying he is going to fight for the championship, but it's down to him. He's got all the tools available to him. He could fight for the championship next
Chris
year.
Fortis in the chat room here is saying, since the summer break, the closest he's got to Lewis's qualifying time is 0.33 seconds, which is still miles off. And actually, from what I can remember, most of it is half a second to 0.7 seconds in qualifying.
Right. That then also goes back to what I was just saying about the Mercedes updates and how they haven't played into his driving style and how he's got to adapt to that.
Well, Lawrence Rolograph actually comes up with a really good point in the chat room. He says that Bottas can start quicker, but he's too slow in the first corner. And when it's wet, he is nowhere. What does that remind you of? Felipe Massa. Actually, that kind of reminds me a little bit of Felipe Massa. He's got very similar Felipe Massa-ish tendencies, and that's not conducive at the moment to win a Constructors' Championship. I mean, he's very lucky that he's got the points he's had, I think.
Let's hear an American voice.
Controversial.
First of all, I'd say that in the battle of the Finnish number two drivers, I would choose Bottas over Räikkönen.
Yes, agreed.
Second of all, I don't believe the issues for him are as bad as all that, and I'll point to one of your favorite driver spanners, Lewis Hamilton. Do you remember going into Canada when Jenson Button was still his teammate? And every race, because they were trying to fix Button's issue, it got harder and harder for Lewis to drive the car. So I believe, like, when it comes to driving styles and cars and setup changes, these are very real issues and not to be put up. And the reason, ultimately, I will give Bottas a pass for now is because when it's come down to it, and we saw it again with him holding off Verstappen, and gaining back all the time that was lost on the undercut for Hamilton, when it's come down to it, he's played the team game and he's been successful where others have not. And I'm not necessarily looking at you, Kimi Räikkönen.
I have to say, you got a good point there. And Sandra Reynolds even says on the chat, he's too nice, not a killer. And that's what you need to be if you want to win a world championship. You need to have that killer instinct, that ruthless streak to go for the move when it's there. I just don't know if Bottas has that.
Okay, Jake, speaking of nice guys, Marcus Ericsson seems like a very nice bloke. What is going on, though? He seems to just find the lamest ways to end a race. It's like he's got this gigantic 3-year-long bet going.
Oh, I can't even give him the Missed Apex Award for this week because it would just be giving him too much credit for anything he's actually done over the course of the weekend. It's just so embarrassing in a point that even Yuji Ide would have watched and gone, oh, hang on a minute, mate. You really need to pull something out of the bag here.
You need better references. I haven't had any of your references today. You've lost 2/3 of the audience. Just reference the Power Ranger or something. Is it more like the red Power Ranger or the black one with her issues? I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I didn't watch rubbish Japanese TV programs. I just don't see why this whole thing is an issue. I'm sure that there is better money to be spent turning Sauber into that Ferrari Academy team and putting Charles Leclerc and Antonio Giovinazzi in the team next year than continuing on with that raging cesspit turgid moron of a buffoon in that car.
Wait.
Absolutely no value having Marcus Ericsson in that car. I think he'd be very, very appropriate in Blancpain when he could just hide away without a personality and bring it home in 17th place every weekend. Go on, Marcus. Do us all a favour.
There was a great article in Autosport this week that quoted Marcus as saying that his, is it the weight difference? Because he's taller than Pascal Wehrlein. It costs him 0.4 of a second per lap, which, as driver excuses go, I've not really heard that one before.
It's one of the most pathetic excuses I've ever heard in my life.
He was off by a decimal point or two with that estimation, unless he weighs like 80 kilograms more than Wehrlein does.
Poor fella. I mean, whenever I'm lucky enough to chat here in the shed with Joe Sayward, Joe always defends Marcus Ericsson and says, you know, just being the least good of these 20 fantastic drivers is no shame. And whilst I respect Joe, he's wrong. Marcus Ericsson is terrible.
When I can think of 10 other drivers who, if you put them in the same car, they would still be better than Marcus Ericsson with no Formula One experience at all. It's just shameful. Get him out of the car. He's wasting everybody's time, including his own.
Matt Trumpets, Force India, two great drivers. Genuinely, I love both these guys. Ocon's kind of got the jump at the moment, but it's a really interesting dynamic there with Perez asking permission. Please, please, can I attack Ocon? And just the frustrated pit engineer. It's just like a weird, awkward step family, isn't it? No, stop touching him. Leave him alone. He's your brother now.
Well, to me, it was more like, can I have ice cream for dinner? We'll talk about that later. we'll let you know soon. And then you get your plate full of broccoli. I mean, what killed me is I think Perez's irony meter was utterly destroyed, because if this was anything, it was just the polar inverse to Canada, where he was like, oh, I'll let Ocon by. Just give me a few more laps. And then before you knew it, it was too late for anything to be done. Let's face it, he brought the situation on himself by driving repeatedly into his teammate, and they said, okay, if you can't behave like adults, we shall treat you like children. And that's exactly what it was. And just by the by, also, whoever cut together the driver's briefing from Malaysia with the music to the Larry David Show, you are a genius, because that was one of the funniest things I have seen in a long, long time.
And I really hope Force India see this season for what it was, a bit of a surprise for Sergio Perez, with Ocon being so competitive and Sergio Perez just trying to, you know, stamp his authority on that team. And we can't fault him for that. He was being aggressive and he was trying to say, no, I'm the number one here, kid, back off. But that's not the case. Ocon is his equal. And I hope that they can start 2018 by saying, okay, you've had last season, now gloves are off again, you can fight again until you repeat that situation and we'll have to rein you back, rather than starting at where we are now, which is very, very neutered and not what anyone really wants to see. Right, On lap 43, the only real proper contact, the only proper real carnage of the race was Magnussen on Massa. Now, this is the kind of move, Chris, that I think 100% depends on which driver you support. If you are supporting Kevin Magnussen and you see him do that on Massa, you think, good on him, great aggressive move. If you dislike Sebastian Vettel and you see him do that, you go, cheat, he's always doing this, it's terrible, throw the book at him.
Well, I mean, Magnussen is usually the one to get his elbows out, and he's quite an entertaining driver for that. And
yep.
I don't agree. It was a great move. But, you know, did he cause a collision? It probably did, but it's fine. This is what I've been saying all season. Let the drivers deal with it themselves.
Yeah, you can let the drivers deal with it themselves. It was a good move. Obviously, he got a tyre on the grass and he ended up sort of with the back end steering out, and then he sort of had to steer into him to save that skid. So you see him actively turning into him, but you've got that choice. You know, do I let my back end go out and lose it, or do I turn into Massa, bump him out of the way? Sorry, mate, and on you go.
It was just convenient enough that it was enough of a punt to let Roman Grosjean through as well.
Yeah, see, there'd have been questions asked if that was a Renault to the left of him that he'd done that to, but it was only Massa, so it's okay. He'll be on his way soon anyway. Jake, do you like blue flags? Because I heard a man on Sky saying that he should ban blue flags. Not a viewpoint I take. Obviously, we're talking about Alonso getting reprimanded with penalty points for blocking Max Verstappen. But the thing is, the solution isn't to ban blue flags. Obviously, the solution is to close the field up so you've got less of them. But given that we do have blue flags, Alonso really just did not care that he was interfering with the leaders' battle.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because I do kind of have this thing against blue flags. And that's only because there isn't a single racing driver I know who legitimately respects them, actually respects them. Because everybody in Formula One is of the killer instinct nature, apart from the two or three we've mentioned, and they are in too good a car to need a blue flag. It's a difficulty because I don't see the purpose of a blue flag in Formula One, but I do see the purpose of a blue flag in Formula One. It's a difficulty because it's catch 22. You should have them and you shouldn't have them. And for somebody like Fernando Alonso, it was kind of necessary because he was so busy concentrating on Felipe Massa. I think he'd kind of forgotten the fact that there was a guy behind him. And we know what Fernando Alonso is like. If the team were to warn him about it, he would have just said, shut up, I'm busy. So that would have been that. And that would have caused another problem all of its own. So it's a difficult one because I don't want them to ban blue flags. I think they do need them, but I think they don't need them. Ask me something else. Trumpets, answer it. My head's hurting.
Right. Well, we have blue flags for the same reason we have traffic lights and stop signs on regular roads. In the best of all worlds, if you were a Formula One driver and you weren't battling the people coming through, you would stay out of their way and let them get to it, because that's only going to cost you time in your race as well. But as it transpires, Formula One drivers are actual people. They hold grudges. And sometimes they just lose sight of the fact that these people are coming. So the blue flag is simply meant to say, here comes a battle that doesn't concern you. Get out of the way as expeditiously as you can, and then get back to doing whatever you're doing. And what's interesting about this, and the only reason we're hearing about it, is because the Massa Alonso battle played into the Hamilton Verstappen battle. In particular, Alonso getting in between them gave Hamilton a gap. And then when he caught up to Massa, it gave him DRS. And, you know, arguably with Massa being behind him through the end of turn one and into the S's, made it impossible for Verstappen to have any chance of catching him. So Alonso gets dinged for ignoring blue flags. However, I'm curious to know if he made the argument that, well, I did get out of the way as soon as I saw the blue flags for Hamilton, and then I saw a blue flag for Verstappen, so I should have had three more corners. I think he should have made this argument because it would have worked.
Yeah, I think it would have worked. You're absolutely right. And it's interesting because Josh Clare comes up with a really interesting conspiracy theory. Alonso still feels guilty about 2007 and made a point of gifting Hamilton the race by not getting out of Verstappen's way quickly. I'd love to believe that Fernando Alonso could be that humane in the middle of a Formula One race. I don't think that's the case. I think he just realized, oh, blast, I suppose I'd better move out of the way then. But the thing that I wanted to get the point out with this is I do feel that ruined the race. for me that ruined the race. The fact that Massa and Alonso didn't get out of the way quick enough. We could have had an amazing battle to the flag. And let's be honest, it's Max Verstappen. It's not somebody who's going to go, oh, well, maybe points is a good idea. Maybe second place. No, he'd have gone for that. He'd have gone for that with every muscle of his soul. He would have thrown it up the inside at the 130R. He would have done something crazy like the final chicane. He'd have done it. And we were robbed of that. And I'm afraid you can say blue flags or not blue flags, Massa and Alonso, probably more Alonso than Massa actually, collectively destroyed the showdown we should have had at the end of that race. That's just how I feel.
I would say that the only reason there was a potentially exciting finish there was because Alonso blocked Lewis in the first place. So that gap was there between Lewis and Max before they came up on Massa and Alonso. And they wasn't going to come down at the end of that race without those two getting involved. So
at the end of the day, though, the battle for that last point, and let's not forget that they were battling for a point, and a point is valuable, and 11th place is useless. But the battle
to Massa and Alonso.
Yeah, but the battle for first for that last point shouldn't be a lap down. It should be 40 seconds back. It's not beyond the wit of man to get to that point.
But I know you brought this up a moment ago, Spanners, which is that, you know, we should just have a closer field so that there isn't so much lappage
just
going
solve
on
it.
In a race.
Yeah.
I completely agree with that. I'm all for a tighter field, but, you know, this is the first year of a big regulation change. A more spread out field is almost, you know, to be expected. I think in the next couple of years, we'll have some more stable regulations and the field will naturally bunch up in itself. Although there are things the sport could do to push that along.
Oh my god, Paul Wright in the chat room is completely right. Spanners needs a blue flag for when the panel go on too long. Let's go to the podium. Do you know, sometimes that green room is awkward, like it's super, super awkward. Today, though, it really felt like three mates having a good crack on. I think the Red Bull lads clearly get on well with each other for now when there's no title on the line. And Lewis Hamilton seems to get on very well with Daniel Ricciardo. But it was hilarious watching Lewis say to Ricciardo, man, you guys were quick today. And Ricciardo's like, we were? Huh? Because I guess from Lewis's point of view, he's got this quick Red Bull. He probably assumed Ricciardo was the same. Ricciardo goes straight over to Verstappen and he's like, were you close to him? You know, because I was getting hounded by a Mercedes at my end.
The brilliant thing about modern technology and the way that we have decided that we need to see the green room at the end of the race is that we actually get to see these guys being human beings and actually having the kind of banter that we all have when we get out of carts at Arrive and Drive. It's absolutely amazing. And I think it's genuinely one of the things that makes Formula One such an incredible spectacle is the fact that we have the green room at the end. We've got that raw emotion. And I think that has become now an integral part of Formula One ever since the Multi-21 incident, when we saw how furious Webber was at Sebastian Vettel post-race in Sepang that year. It's become an essential part of the program coverage. And you'll notice now, commentators shut up during that point. Yeah. They stop talking because they want to ingest every single molecule of the seconds of that little incident. And again, you're absolutely right. I mean, it was a magnificent moment of human, really? We were actually competitive today? And that's what we need. We need more of that humanism in Formula One. It's brilliant.
Well, and that's what brings the drama. Do the drivers like each other? Do they hate each other? What do they really say? That behind the scenes stuff always draws eyeballs. And speaking of drawing eyeballs, was anybody else struck by the romantic eyes Daniel Ricciardo was making at Lewis Hamilton and has been in several podium cool down rooms in a row? If there was an odds on favorite for a Mercedes seat in 2019 that wasn't Valtteri Bottas, I'm going to put Ricciardo way up on the list because they just look like they'd have fun together.
Well, they do. And certainly Lewis Hamilton leaving his phone in that kind of classic way that we've all had on nights out where you realize he's not got a password on that, because you always check he's not got a password on this. I am going to post all the things. And he goes straight for the throat, straight for Lewis's heart, Instagram, and starts, you know, mucking around on there, which is great fun. Certainly a good character for Formula One. But in that green room, I love the way that despite being racing drivers since birth, or even before that in some cases, they still haven't come up with a better way to describe moves than what we do after karting, which is to sort of put our hands flat in front of us together and sort of whir our hands around each other, simulating the move. You'd think they'd have some sophisticated racing driver way of doing it. But yeah, onto the podium. It's nice because we, you know, sometimes we have to put up with Eddie Jordan and then the less bad Sky commentators. I like Martin Brundle being
DC,
up there. Yeah, the DC. Channel 4 crew are all brilliant. Oh, no, you're saying DC's bad. Oh, no, I think all the
never,
Channel 4 guys are
never
good.
Never, ever have DC on another podium ever again. I'm sorry. Never,
it was,
ever,
it was a bit
ever.
Awkward with him after qualifying, trying to kind of shoehorn Jenson Button in there and go, you know, Jenson Button, he's our guy. Yeah, they've got Nico, but we've got Jenson here. He's our ex-champion.
I love Jenson. But Jensen, stop saying buddy. It was so excruciatingly painful. I think he said buddy more times in the space of 5 minutes than I say my own children's names when I'm talking to them. It was appalling.
For sure.
For sure. I was going to say, did he say it more than Rosberg said for sure on Sky? At least Rosberg did that in good humor. But yeah, but this time we had, I've forgotten his name completely, Sato, on there with his big Indy 500 ring. What a nice bloke. Like, he's just on there, like, super polite, super professional. And it was just a very different kind of podium interview than we normally get. And what did you make of him taking the bling?
That was a fantastic moment right there. Lewis Hamilton, having just won, you know, one of the best circuits in the world. And Takuma Sato comes along, smartly dressed, dapper chap. Really, really likable bloke in his home country, a national hero. He's wearing the Indy 500 winner's ring. And that's the only thing, it seems, that Lewis Hamilton is interested in. He's like, where did you get that ring? And all I'm thinking is that, well, there's one at the Indianapolis 500. If you want it, Lewis, go on, go do it. You know you want it. And I think that is the only reason he's now interested in the Indy 500. It's got nothing to do with the fact that that's the greatest spectacle in motor racing. It's got nothing to do with the fact that Alonso went and so nearly won. And it's something that he could do to emulate people like Jackie Stewart and Jim Clark. Nah, he wants that ring. That's the only thing he's interested in, is he wants that ring.
Lewis Hamilton looks at bling like me and Matt look at new whiskies. Ooh, I've not tried that one before. I need that one near me. But yeah, okay, so let's go on to our awards. Thanks for bearing with us, lads. I know we've overrun a little bit. All right, then, Chris Stevens, who is your thing of the weekend?
Max Verstappen. Simple as that. Did a sterling job in the Red Bull. Start was amazing.
Easing ahead of Daniel Ricciardo, isn't he?
I'd say it's such an interesting battle. It's one of the best teammate rivalries I've ever seen in motorsport, and I'm just loving the way it's unfolding.
Jake Sanson, who is your thing of the weekend?
Takuma Sato's ring is my thing of the weekend. That's the only thing Lewis Hamilton cared about on that podium, was the ring.
Matt Trumpets, who's your thing of the weekend?
Well, like I said, I think the honorable mention goes to the driver's briefing video, but the real winner, Lance Stroll, for his trip through the gravel trap and subsequent code brown moment for Daniel Ricciardo.
Man, that was insane. Thing is, though, Ricciardo, was he just thinking about the race and keeping his foot in? Because he did. He kept it flat. Or was he thinking that was the safest way around that incident?
He was thinking, I hope I don't get... Actually, after the race, he literally said, I was getting kind of bored, and that really got me excited.
Fair enough. Racing drivers are weird. My thing of the weekend is going to go to Sebastian Vettel. His reaction after the race was solid. What more could you ask of him? He was a team player. He acted like a team leader. There was no hint of a hissy fit or anything like that. He must have been devastated. You could see his face as he was talking to the pit crew and thanking them and making his way back that he was absolutely gutted. But 10 out of 10 for that reaction. What can you do? And when he got asked, has this shown you that you can challenge for next season? He said, no, we're not done yet. We're not done yet this season. I'm not ready to write Ferrari off. I'm not ready to write Sebastian Vettel off yet either. He's a cornered animal. He now has nothing to lose, and he is a talent. Before we go on to the Missed Apex Award, Jake Sanson, boss of Downforce Radio, you keep teasing us. You keep teasing us with things about your next projects. Tell us something. Give us a glimmer. Come on. Where are you going next?
Okay, so next weekend, I'm going to be at Silverstone for the British Racing and Sports Car Club finale. I'm going to be in the commentary box for the Caterham Motorsport Championships. Remember Caterham?
Yeah,
the ex-Formula One team. They actually have their own Caterham Championships for all of the proper Caterham cars. That's going to be 2 days of non-stop racing on the Silverstone International Circuit. Come and watch. It's very, very cheap. And then the week after that, I fly to Spain. I will not tell you yet why, but I will tell you soon. It's going to be good. Let's put it that way.
I was
going
to say, any fantastic and monumental news to announce today, Jake, was going to be my question.
Monumental news. I can't announce it yet. I so want to, but I'm literally like a 9-year-old sitting there going, oh, I can't tell people. I have to wait. I'm really sorry.
Obviously, you're going to do it through Downforce channels, but make sure you come and chat to us as soon as you can afterwards to talk about it.
So will.
Chris Stevens, Autosport. How's that going? Are they sticking with you? Really?
I hope so. I'm done for the year. With my 750 Motor Club duties. They had the final meeting at Donington last weekend, which was absolutely fantastic. Lots of championships being decided. There's some bit about that on my Twitter feed. If you're interested in a bit of club motorsport, interestingly enough, Billy Albone was crowned a RGB champion, and he used to race in karting with Ashley Sutton, who won the BTCC title that weekend as well. So that there's good stuff in there, and there is some potential Autosport work on the horizon that I can't really.
Oh, you've dropped a Sanson, another one.
What I can talk about is me and Matt are most likely going to be doing e-radio this week, as we've had Formula E testing in Valencia, pre-season testing. And that's the only glimpse of the cars we'll see on track before the first round in Hong Kong in December, which we're very excited about.
Excellent. Speaking of Matt Trumpets, what are you up to, pal?
Oh, you know, this and that, things that I can't really talk about
Get out of here. But you can be found at MattPT55 on Twitter. Forgot about the lads there. Obviously, I'm at Spanners Ready, at CStevens_Journo. And have you managed? Are you at Jake Sanson, Jake?
I'm at Jake Sanson, yes.
Yeah, because it's a weird name, because it's very close to a very popular name. But yeah, that smacks of birth certificate typo to me.
It does a little bit, but the advantage is I also am the only person in the Xbox Live community with that name. So it is literally Jake Space Sanson. You won't find me being known as Cheeseboard57. I can't be bothered with that kind of thing.
And I can announce as well that I will be voicing the sequel to A Beast of Tale's End, if you caught that. So that looks like very much like it's going to be a series now. It's selling. So why not catch up with Beast of Tale's End on audible.com, voiced by me, written by Kyle Robert Schultz. Okay, the Missed Apex Award. Who do you give your Missed Apex Award to, Matt Trumpets?
Ooh, this is a challenge. This is a real challenge. This is a total challenge. and I'm not going to take the obvious one. I'm going to go with Nico Hülkenberg's rear wing.
It's a tiny, tiny thing to put you out of a race, isn't it? It's a shame they couldn't have just somehow wedged it on, gaffer tape, on you go, no DRS, keep racing.
I like, Formula One being a very technologically advanced sport. I like not only the way they use push brooms to clean up the debris, I like the way they use their fist and hammers to bang on things to make them work right. This, to me, is genius.
Chris Stevens, who missed the apex for you?
Well, I was going to pick Hülkenberg's DRS as well. Now I'm going to think of something else. When he got a Sanson, come back to me in 2 minutes.
Jake.
Okay, mine is a tie. I can't pick between the two. One of them is Stoffel van Dorn for running wide at the first corner and ruining McLaren's best chance of scoring the points in the whole race, because he lost about 7 places doing that. And Raikkonen, similarly, around the same lap for chickening out in the Force India battle and being run wide and off the circuit, again, losing about 8 places.
Harsh. I am going to give it to, and this is going to seem harsh, but I expect more and I want more before the end of the season. And in your first full season, Pierre Gasly had a chance at a point today. If you want to be a superstar, you got to grab them. You've got to grab them. And even if you've got a flat spot, maybe, I'm not a racing driver, but it felt a bit like, it didn't go right. I've got a flat spot. Now I'm giving up on points. If you'd have walked away with a point today, you'd have looked like a legend. And I think he is someone that people want to see do well. Chris Stevens, have you got one now?
I've got Lance Stroll's front right tyre for giving up 6 laps from the finish.
Savage. Do we have any pony awards? Hang on a second. Let me play the pony award, because I like that one.
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Matt, you always have the best pony awards.
Well, of course, there can be only one, and that would be our friend Checo on the radio nonstop, begging to be set forth to attack his teammate, which, of course, would have done neither of them any good.
Any more ponies, boys?
Checo for exactly the same reason, although I'm not sure this quite qualifies for a pony award, but I do want to make the point of it that Renault needlessly milked Julian Palmer's last race at the end of proceedings. I mean, it's not as if you haven't already punched him in the gut by taking away his drive. You've also whacked him in the face with a sharp stick as he goes out of the team. Thanks for everything. We'll miss you. Oh, stop being so ridiculously over-emotional. You fired the bloke. Let him leave with his things in a box.
I heard that, speaking of his things, I heard they took parts off his car to save them for signs as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's super, super awkward. Matt, I think we've just about got time for comment of the week.
Comment of the week.
I made the letters in the show notes super, super big this week, so I wouldn't forget it.
Right. And indeed, I have been collecting a comment here and a comment there. Let's start with this. And before we go on, I do have to say I apologize, because when it comes to thing of the week, one thing I did want to mention was that Haas double points moved up a place in the Constructors' Championship, and they should be applauded for that, because good for them. And that was all down to that lovely Magnussen move that we all agree was completely above board and kosher and not at all illegal. We're going to start early. Sam Watley. Ericsson would accidentally load up cruise ship simulator and head off into the sea when we were discussing using simulators to drive the cars. When we were talking about Carlos Sainz, Christopher Fonseca, Sainz is basically messing up the house before the next tenants move in. You know what move. And then Sam Watley again. Carlos Sainz would give Irvine a run for his money in the after party.
Get in. Who are we giving it to, Matt?
I think we're going to have to go with Manolo Besseling, a brand new participant in the chat room, for I'm sure Ferrari will have an explanation for all of their bad luck, and it certainly isn't their own fault.
Well done there. He's not new. He's been in here before. He's been in and out. I bet that's a Danish name, I think that is, Belsing. But well done to you. Feel free to add that to your Twitter handle. You have
comment of the week.
Guys, thank you very much for listening. I won't be here next week, as I will be in Manchester all weekend in a carnival of science and skepticism at QEDCon. Yes, I will sit and listen patiently to you normally about cheese and chakras, but I get one weekend a year where I get to go, no, that's silly, and sit with a bunch of grumpy other people saying that magic isn't real. I think Chris Stevens and Matt Trumpets are going to ably fill in and see if they can get Summers in as well. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Don't rely on me to put it out on social media. If you go to @MissedApexF1, the subscription information is on the pinned tweet. Also, if you go to MissedApexPodcast.com, you will get information on how to make sure it's delivered to your phone every single week. So I will see you. What's the next race, Matt? Is it Austin or Mexico? It's Mexico.
I don't know. Chris Stevens is mouthing something into his microphone because he forgot the mute button exists.
It's Austin. It's Austin.
Come on.
So I will see you for the Austin race review, unless I can get hold of Joe Saywood before then. But until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex. Jake, you win doing that. It's the only award you'll win. And also, you'll be pleased to hear that the next Missed Apex karting event is running ballast.
Oh, amazing. I'm so going to beat you all, because I won't need any. Excellent.
Well, you don't know where we're setting the weight limit yet. It's somewhat generous to think we're basically going to add an extra person in just so that you can be equal. The suspension will only take so much on the cars.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.